You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast, and it's brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich community life here in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals are dedicated to seeing projects from the initial design concept all the way through to final completion. Have a property design or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. We are back with the Massive Report here at Point Tavern in beautiful Upper Arlington. Is this Upper Arlington? I think technically it's Upper Arlington.
Close enough.
We're going to say that. We, much like the Columbus crew, are without our captain. Brian Phillips is not here again this week, but he is hopefully on the mend and will be able to join us soon for the Massive Report. But we got some reinforcements. Alex Stanek is back this week, along with Mike Krosky, Pat Murphy, Sam Fahmy, myself, Bart. Alex, we're glad to have you back.
It's good to be here. This is like season 8 for me.
I was thinking like on the
way. I think this is the eighth season. So I've got more years on this podcast and we'll try pad in a crew uniform, so that's a win.
And if we learned anything from Game of Thrones, this means this is going to be the best season and will leave all of our fans incredibly satisfied at its conclusion.
That's right.
We're spending more money for it and everyone is going to love it.
That's right.
Well,
I should just quit after the season and just make like the last 6 episodes like super disappointing. Like, wait, what team are we talking about again? I thought this was an LA Galaxy podcast.
We'll just do like one episode a month and just try to condense it all, but still just have an hour long episode. Just try to talk about everything, all the, you know, references, everything that we talked about in this, you know, past episode. They'll all be forgotten and we're just a deluge of everything.
Mike, do you know what they're talking about?
I haven't got the slightest.
Okay, cool. As long as we're on the same page.
Yeah. If we got to like the extended Star Wars universe or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Pat would be able to help us. But
I know
one person
about Marvel.
Who's never seen. I guess Marvel. It's all Disney.
I've watched some of Game of Thrones.
These dudes have never seen Game of Thrones, but they'll talk for 15 minutes about the XFL.
XFL is so amazing.
True. You just wait.
Pathetic.
Well, we do have, heard that kind of bitterness coming over that little back and forth, the serve and volley. We were missing a little something last week, we talked a lot about the departure of one Will Trapp, and we had everybody, I think, of a somewhat similar mind. We all seem to sort of agree that this was a decision that, you know, maybe not the most tactfully made, but nonetheless a decision that we think ultimately benefited both the team and the player in the long term. But we have here now back with us Alex Stanek to offer the rebuttal to that, which is that actually that was bad.
Actually, it was bad. And, you know, it's just, I mean, it's good for Will because he's out from under the thumb of Caleb Porter, the worst coach in crew history from a man management perspective.
There we go.
So on one hand, I'm very, very happy for Will. He can go to a team where he can be supported and appreciated and not treated like a pile of dirt, you know. And I, as someone who cheered for that homegrown kid, I'm very happy for him.
Stanek.
That he's free from that. But
this
is a loss for the team. And this is the second player who has been with the crew for a very long time that has been like, you know what? Guys, I think it's time for me to go because this guy is kind of...
Who is the first you're referring to?
J9 is who I'm referring to.
Oh, you mean the guy they traded and had no say in the matter?
Who?
Justin. The guy who also got traded by the previous coach who you adore.
Well, he was very not a fan of Caleb Porter, is my understanding.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people. There were people... Dilly Duca didn't like Greg Berhalter. Does that make him the worst coach in crew history?
If we're comparing Will Trapp to Dilly Duca, I think that we're probably not
going
to agree on this.
I missed this. I just want to say that.
I think that Will Trapp wanted to be in Columbus more than Dilly Duca wanted to be in Columbus. I'm not sure Dilly Duca ever wanted
Will Trapp has wanted to leave this team.
For Europe, yes.
Correct.
Yes. Is Miami in Europe?
It might as well be.
It's
have you been
close,
there?
Really?
Isn't their name Inter different. Miami? Aren't you familiar with Inter? Just in general,
Inter means between.
Their name is Inter Miami for now, but they lost. Right. That
yeah,
losses,
yeah. They're
so
about to lose that trademark.
Like, well,
as of this
Sporting,
podcast,
Sporting Miami, Sporting but, Club Miami, and then they're going to get sued by somebody else. That's right. Yeah.
Stanek, so I know you're the troll of the podcast. I got it. I know we all have little gimmicks and bits.
I was the Sunshine Brigade before you guys were even here. I was Mr. Optimism. The person who has snuffed that out of me is one Caleb Porter, who gave us, you know, this garbage season last year and keeps hurting the fans on top of this.
How?
So this is what I expect will happen, is that next week we are going to get
now
a shirt
sponsor.
Now
he's doing Nostradamus.
We're going
to
get a shirt
sponsor.
This is what he
expects to happen.
And Caleb Porter is going to come out and be like, actually, by coach decree, we have no shirt sponsor. And
what if the shirt sponsor is just Caleb? What
That'd
if he just sponsors the
team?
It's
going to
be $5 shirt sponsorship, and it's just going to be Caleb Porter's face.
So that would be bad management by those that are above him. So I would put them on the powers higher up.
So, Stan, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What is your threshold for Porter this year? You mentioned a number prior to the show.
Yeah, so I think I said four games when we were talking off air in the beginning. My thing is
four games. What? What's what?
So,
what do you mean? Like,
the
how many
question,
points do they have to
so
accumulate?
So the question becomes, how long you want to suffer again when you already suffered all last season, right? So like, how long do you really want to suffer before you start saying, you know what, it's not going to get better, and maybe it'll get better. The attacking midfielder that we signed, he's amazing. I mean, Lucas looks like the real deal. He's incredibly talented. The team is
based on all that crew footage you've seen of him.
Based on all the teams that he's played for that are way better than the crew and playing way better opposition than the crew, if you can put up a performance in Liga MX, then you can easily put up a performance.
Well, but he played on the wing and didn't make a lot of statistics.
He looked good.
We'll get more to him later.
I'm confident in that, and because I'm confident in that, I'm sure that Caleb Porter had virtually nothing to do with that, and that was 100% Bez.
What?
100% Bez.
I can tell you that is far from the truth, but 100%. Believe what you want to
100%
believe.
100%
Bez. No. Wait a second. Hold on. Murph, please chime in on this, because you have – we even discussed this beforehand.
Even a blind squirrel finds an
get
acorn
out of here.
From time to time, guys.
Caleb's found a lot of acorns, like Valeri,
Blanco.
Fernando Adi twice,
David Guzman. David Guzman, yeah.
Was good.
Can we talk about Adi?
We're going to talk about Adi.
Okay.
We've got...
Adi's another one of these head scratchers from Porter where I'm kind of like,
what?
Come on, man.
Hold on. All right. One out of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's get back to...
Murph, please talk about... But please rebut Stanek and what he was just talking about with the
Alex already knows this, and this isn't going to change what he says, but
no.
From my understanding, and I think people can probably put this together, there were two targets that the crew had as replacements for Federico Higuain. And I believe we wrote about this on Mass Report, actually, but one of them was like a 19-year-old, I want to say Colombian kid, and his name is escaping me right now. I'm trying to look it up. It was I found it the other day. Hold on, I'll find it here by the end of this. But
Carlos Valderrama.
It was not Carlos Valderrama, but he did have great hair, if I remember from the pictures. Mm. And
I'm envious.
And then there was Lucas Zelleron, and the debate going on within the crew was, do you want to get somebody who is more of a finished product and can help you win right now? Or do you want maybe a guy who has a little bit more potential, maybe a lot more potential, and could be flipped down the road, like a Miguel Almiron, for instance, mm-hmm. for a big profit? But maybe
to a big club, yeah, Newcastle United.
Yeah, yes, Bart, we know. but maybe you don't get as much right away on-field production from a player who's still developing. And so I think that I know that the decision was made, and likely because of the disappointing season last year, and obviously there's a big pressure on this season to get wins. They're moving into a new stadium next year. You want fans excited about that. To go with the more experienced, more proven guy, so to speak. So,
Stanek, comment.
You have if Lucas Zelleron becomes, and we'll hear Caleb Porter talk about him later, actually. But if he becomes a star, you've got to give that one to Caleb, because I know he was big on that.
No, and that's true. I mean, I want him to be successful. I think it was
a
good signing.
I don't think
you do. I think that my we can talk about whether it was smart to let Federico Higuain go or not. I think that one issue that I have with Porter that Higuain and Trapp and all these guys that we're letting go kind of signal is that Porter has little to no interest in preserving the culture that existed under Greg Berhalter. On one hand, I understand that. He's a different coach. These aren't his guys. But on the other hand, these are guys who stuck with us to save the crew and guys who have done, you know, time here in Columbus. And you know,
Ivan Franco. That was the other guy's name.
They're, you know, they're beloved players by this, by these fans. And, you know, to couple the loss of these players with what was objectively a terrible season last year is just kind of a gut punch. If he turns it around this season, he's gonna buy himself a lot of that goodwill back. But until he does that, until he shows what this team can do, we haven't seen it yet. I think fans have reason to be skeptical.
May I remind you of what happened after the 2010 season?
That's what I was thinking. Yep.
But that's, I mean, that's...
Or the 2007 season, with the first year with Ziggy.
And but I think 2010 is a good example.
You know who didn't
of,
like
of
Ziggy? Most players on that team until they put it together in 2008. And I'm not saying that that's the case here, but the you know, you're saying multiple people have left the team because of Caleb Porter. And I think we've talked plenty that Caleb Porter has a very specific coaching style that requires certain types of players. You know,
specifically the players from a single year roster Portland, Oregon.
He's had three.
Out of 11. Yes,
what do you mean 11? There was 26 guys in that roster. What are you talking about?
Well, Guzman was a starter for them, right?
Guzman started some games, yes.
But he started games for them, and who was the third guy who started games for them?
See, you're just sour, Stanek. Just admit you're sour because the Timbers beat Columbus. That's all it has to do. If it was not Caleb Porter, if it was a guy named Joe Smith, Coach Joe Smith doing all the same stuff, you wouldn't say any of this.
If there was a single coach who had built their reputation on one MLS Cup win, and then they tried
a national championship at Akron. And
so I've never been one to put much weight on college. We can talk about that separately. I don't draw.
Okay, because I guess Bruce Arena and Ziggy Schmidt's history. That just cut that out.
Greg Andrulis.
Andrulis is terrific.
Greg Andrulis, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, Greg Andrulis.
I think
the defense rests, Your Honor. Yes.
Hey, he won the team's first supporter shield.
What facts. I would say is that that's I think there is – I think where the analogy to 2010 does kind of ring through is the fashion with which these decisions and personnel decisions have kind of been made. And not – again, I don't think there's ever a smooth and good way to trade Will Trapp or a good way to sever ties with Federico Higuain, but I think the impression that a lot of fans, you know, it's hard for fans to compartmentalize that, and I think you could have put a little bit more effort in there to find a way to do that in a way that kind of gives these players the ability to say bye with this fans and to Caleb Porter's credit, and I don't know if this is a, you know, new precedent for him or a new precedent for the crew organizations, it is my understanding that he actually did give Will Trapp the opportunity to say goodbye to his teammates. That's not usually something that's permitted to players after they are their departure.
Well, especially during, you know, before the season. You know, if you're packing up your stuff in the locker room, obviously you get that opportunity, but in a situation like that where, you know, they're preseason and, you know, it's not the normal everyday type thing. But anyway, continue.
Oh, no, I think that's so I think, you know, credit to Caleb Porter on that front. But it's I guess, Alex, where do you stand on, you know, Will Trapp, his progression? Do you think that, you know, he was and should have remained, or if he's a guy who wanted to go to Europe, that, you know, if it does it make more sense for them to keep him this year and sell him in the summer versus lose him for nothing to Europe? I guess money, and you're getting money back sort of either way. But if Will Trapp was leaving was a foregone conclusion and something that he wanted to pursue, regardless of who the manager was, because this was something that was talked about for quite some time when he was with Greg Berhalter, where's the fault lie in Caleb Porter there?
So, I mean, I think this just comes down to a fundamental disagreement I have with Caleb Porter in the way that you build a locker room. I come from, Serie A is kind of my European soccer background, and I was a hardcore Serie A fan probably before I was a hardcore Crew fan. I was a casual Crew fan. But in Serie A, every team for the most part has one or two players who just kind of stick around, if not for their entire career, then for, you know, maybe a decade.
Josh Williams.
And they're called bandieri, you know, they're flag bearers is the translation. And they're people who set the tone and set the culture for the team. Coaches come and go, but these are the guys who keep the other guys in line. These are the guys who kind of pass down the tribal knowledge of the club. These are the guys who go to the fans if there's a disagreement and sort things out. And those guys are important for kind of keeping the identity of the club consistent across, you know, years and decades and generations. And Caleb Porter, I don't think, has any interest in something like that. I think Caleb Porter is interested in building for a 2 or 3 year period of time and making a run and then blowing it up. You know, when you let a guy like Will Trapp go for $100,000 in TAM,
potentially $300,000.
That's still less than what we paid David Guzman last year. It's not a good return. If you have Will Trapp and you sell him to Panathinaikos or some Greek league team after he got his Greek passport for, you know, $1 million, I don't think people are upset about this. I think people say, you know, this is great for Will Trapp. It's a better opportunity for him to grow, and we're getting a return. We did not get a return. He's not going to have an opportunity to grow. He's going to be playing in the same league that he was playing in before. It's not going to make him a better player. It's going to get him out from under Caleb Porter's thumb.
Well,
and so
devil's advocate here, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying. And we talked about this last week, so sorry for kind of the redundancy, but, you know, Will leaving for that little amount, which I agree is less than I think anyone thought he would leave for, is disappointing. I think we can all agree on that we thought it would be a bigger number, and everyone was surprised to see, even if it does go up to 300,000, even if they get a percentage of a transfer, and even if they use that international roster spot for somebody good, it's still not what you expected from Will Trapp. But I think that there's a few things to consider. First of all, I think everyone in the league was aware that he was interested in a move. And so that brings your price down a little bit because you know that the player wants out. Not that much, but it certainly brings it down. He's also in the last year of his contract. So Miami knows that they're going to have to, or whoever, knew that they were going to have to re-sign a guy who wants to go to Europe. From Will's perspective, I think that the move to Miami will put him at a higher profile team within this
right.
league. And he may have a chance. No. Now, he's been on the national team. He's certainly been seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, clubs around Europe know who he is. Obviously, we know about the bids from Blackburn, and there have been some others, at least, that have expressed interest. But I do think that, you know, being in Miami could, you know, help him get seen. And then, you know, if he's out of contract at the end of the year, moving on to another club. So, yes, is it disappointing that he was able to walk for that much? Yes. Does that say, you know, maybe there's more animosity than anyone's letting on? I don't know. I mean, we can speculate about that. Both Will, and I talked to Will separately. He didn't have anything negative to say about his time here. He was glad to you know, put it behind him and move on to a new challenge was kind of how he put it to me. And we all saw what Bez said and what Caleb said. So I don't know. It's certainly a weird one because you expect, like you said, those kind of flag bearer type guys to if they're gonna leave, move for a bigger number. But I also don't know what the market was for Willie Moore. You know, he had a bad season last year. Let's be frank about that. And we can blame that on whoever we want, but you know, I just think there were reasons his price dropped. I don't know if there were reasons it dropped that much.
I think to sell any U.S. national team regular for $100K, not to mention a U.S. national team regular who is a one-club player who is a homegrown for your team right after you just saved your team, right before you're opening a new stadium, it sends the signal, like all of the things I just mentioned about him being a one-club player and him, you know, helping save the team and all this stuff doesn't factor in.
Well, and it doesn't. From a business standpoint, it's, they're not about sentimental. That's not how it works if you want to win championships.
Well, and I think that that's something where they're fundamentally misunderstanding this market. I think that, you know, championships are great, and championships are going to bring in Ohio State fans. Well, let me respond.
Go ahead.
So, you know, you can bring in the college kids with stuff like that, but the hardcore fans that saved this team care deeply about the history of this team, the culture of this team, and the kind of fundamentals. I mean, this respect your root stuff was not a catchphrase. This was not something that we used to try to get, you know, newspapers involved. This was something that people felt deeply and still feel today. And, you know, we are proud of that here. We're proud that we saved the team. We're proud that Will Trapp wore a Save the Crew armband for the
better. So what is your suggestion?
My suggestion is to demonstrate to the fans that these things matter. And
but how? What I'm saying is, if there's not a market, like, do you think they just said, "Yeah, we'll take 100"? And oh, you want to offer 600? Nah, forget it. Just give us 100. I'm sure they took what they could get.
I know, but I wouldn't have done it. You know, and I think when you have a
but then
like
you have
Wilshere,
a guy who has no natural position in this new lineup. He wouldn't have played much. He didn't play that well last year because the scheme doesn't fit what he's trying to do. What
there
Porter's
are,
trying to do.
I don't think, and you know, I don't want to get too far into this. I don't think that if the locker room situation would have been a little bit better, that Will Trapp would have been asking for a transfer to a Major League Soccer club.
What do you mean?
He was holding out for a European transfer.
But he was doing that before Porter came along. That's what he wanted to begin with.
And he never found it. But he also had plenty of opportunities to go to other Major League Soccer teams and did not take them.
What are you talking about?
He was linked with all kinds of clubs.
But it's not his decision. The team has to decide if they want to let him go.
It was a mutual decision this time.
And what I will say
to... And the reason it was mutual is because he had gotten to the point where he was comfortable leaving Columbus for a Major League Soccer team due to his relationship with Caleb Porter.
That's fair. But again, he also sees the writing on the wall. He's not a dumb guy. Trapp sees the writing on the wall. Of the triangle in the midfield, he probably wasn't going to get a ton of time, or potentially, because it was probably going to have Artur in that holding role. And you know Nagby's going to be there, and so is...
As bad of a season as Trapp had, I think Artur had an equally terrible season, and he could have easily benched
him. This is true.
But he's also 8 years younger.
And he's peaked. He's in the same boat.
Artur has peaked, but Trapp hasn't?
Artur has not improved since he came to Columbus.
That's where we disagree from a scouting standpoint.
There's no lie there. I mean, Artur definitely is not if Will Trapp has plateaued these last couple of years, Artur did as well. Now, that saying that, though, Alex, sure. I think if we're going to talk about him being a bandolera or whatever it is, that's got to be two-way. And I don't think, you know, to your own point, I don't think Will Trapp was necessarily interested in being a one club, you know, the guy, a one club guy. I think we all romanticized that idea, but again, this is a guy who had aspirations for going to Europe, and you know, when it came down to it, he didn't let his love of Columbus and working here prevent him from, you know, turning down an opportunity to go to Miami. So he still chose to do that. He was a willing accomplice. Now, can you say that he was maybe pushed by Caleb Porter, by you know, whether it's his fit in the system or his level of comfort in the locker room playing for Caleb? You know, regardless, he still also was a willing consenting adult in this one too.
Yep.
But I do think we've talked a lot about, you know, what Caleb said, but we have Caleb himself, I believe, that we can hear, listen to.
And Artur are two unproven players from the academy. Yeah, well, what I can tell you is throughout this past year, since I took the job, Will, myself, Pat, and Tim have had honest and open discussions and communication regarding his desire, his intent. And we've been very open, regarding options. In the end, there was an option, obviously, with Miami. We presented that option to Will. They had a discussion, and it became a mutual decision for him to go there. And Pat and Tim so much so that he allowed Will to say goodbye to the team in person, which is something that I've never seen or done. And he deserved that respect. And I think it also shows how good of terms we were on. And listen, these things are never easy. But it's a good story for him that will never be lost. Hometown kid, homegrown, played 7 years for the club. His legacy will last forever with what he did for the club. I know personally, from my standpoint, I really enjoyed all the weekend I had with him.
And that's Caleb Porter, you know, going on and touching on that. And I, you know, I don't know how much of that is, again, you know, Caleb Porter after the fact working his way and saying all the right things. But it sounded he said, I think, the right things, and it sounded sincere.
Yeah, I'm a little bit with Mike on this. To me, it's like Will Trapp went into the transfer portal for all of you college fans. That's kind of what it seemed to happen. Yeah. This is a situation where even Will knew that this system is going to change, and maybe he does. Maybe it's great self-awareness, but Will feeling that he does not fit in that new system. Plus, you're going to go. Your boss is going to be whoever your coach is. But guess what? You're also playing for David Beckham, who might know a team or two around Europe that could provide you with that outlet. Once you start kind of like, yeah, he had a bad season last year. He was starting to be more on the bench for the men's national team. You're kind of starting to see a little bit of writing on the wall. So I love Will, but I think it was time.
Well, and I think, and I'll let you finish it, Alex, but I think, like, we have to realize this is a different crew team, and I completely understand your perspective of, you know, the Save the Crew stuff and, like, the loyalty and all that. And I think that that's, if that can work, and you can still win, then that's fantastic. But I think Caleb came here and was brought in by the Haslams and Dr. Pete with the intent of, we need to win something. You know, Greg did some great things here, and I've defended Greg, you know, with the national team stuff and even with crew fans back in 2016 because I think Greg's a great coach. But, you know, there is something to say that, you know, he did get to a final, but he couldn't win it, and, you know, maybe the approach that Greg has, which has always been a players first type of mentality, and that's why I think some of the players did not work under a Caleb system, which, you know, take the soccer side out of it, you know, he's just a hard nose, going to give it to you straight, and, you know, you can argue whether that's the right way to go about it or not, but if you have the right type of players, that works. You see it in Europe a lot. Those type of coaches have success. And you see both sides. I don't want to make it sound like one's better than the other. But I think that necessitated changes. And if one of those had to be Will Trapp, that's unfortunate, 100%. But, you know, if that means that they start to win because now they have guys that better fit what Caleb wants to do, because Caleb's here. I mean, let's be sure. Frank about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether you want him here or not, yeah. He was who the Haslams and mm-hmm. Pete picked. So you want guys that are going to fit with that, and you want to win, right? And I guess that's kind of where I stand.
Yeah, I think my concern is twofold, and I think the unspoken concern that I have, and I wasn't here to talk about this either, so I don't want to rehash this topic as well. But there were these rumors about the rebrand, and there were really well connected people who said, you know, they've backed off now, but yeah, there was. Basically, the reports were true initially, and then they saw the backlash and immediately put out a statement saying,
"Oh no,
no,
Porter's fault though.
We wouldn't ever do any of that."
Is that Porter's fault? I don't understand the correlation.
No, no. What I'm saying is that I think perhaps all of the new people who came in don't really understand what it was that saved the team in the first
sure.
place.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, I was with you too when that came out. It's
the,
like,
the
you know,
the concern that I have is that the community aspect of things, the kind of Columbus pride that comes with this team, is secondary to the the business and the sporting aspects of the team in a way that will ultimately undermine both of those things.
You know, my thought is the way I took it after the dust settled was less about that and more just like, hey, we have a new team. Let's kick around the idea. Should we change? Should we not? And then after a little bit of thought, they thought this wasn't a great idea. So they went away from it. I don't think there's anything wrong with exploring an option and going, yeah, that's not a good idea to change.
I think it got further than that, and I think that it was something that was in progress when they saw this backlash, and I think now they've rethought things and have completely backed off of it for the most part. I think that there will still be some logo changes, but the color changes that were being talked about and things like that, they've bailed on. But from what I've heard, those were very real.
Sure.
And that is concerning to me because it makes me think that the people who they brought in, who may be a lot of Browns folks, don't really understand what got us back to where we
perhaps they today. Don't, but let's just play devil's advocate here. Once they... You can have preconceived notions and ideas, right? And then when you get into a market and really see what works, what doesn't work, what the market's about, there's nothing wrong with going, that probably wouldn't have been a great idea. We see now that this would not work, right?
Sure.
And then to go back, there's nothing wrong with having an idea and going, after some second, third thoughts, this isn't going to work, right? But I think the main thing is this is a reason why fans don't make player decisions, right? I mean, Trapp wasn't going to be a fit. Higuain's 35 or whatever he is, coming off an ACL injury. There's no way he was coming back. No way he was coming back.
Gaston Sarro came back after
an ACL. But he was also 7 years younger.
Yeah, but he still came back.
And it's also a different position.
I think that keeping people around it, and I guess Josh Williams is the guy now. And I hope that they keep him around too, but he's kind of...
They're five center backs right now.
He's kind of the last of that...
Hector Jimenez maybe too. But Josh is really the only, although he was a one club guy.
Yeah, but he's the last of like that 2009, 2010, 2011 kind of Eric Gehrig, Josh Williams, Will Trapp, Aaron Schoenfeld kind of bro team that would always go on vacation with each other and stuff. I guess I just feel like...
And those guys won a lot of games, let me remind
you.
That's
true.
Those are great teams.
But what I'm saying is...
Schoenfeld might be coming back to the league.
Yeah.
I think he's going to kill it now that he's back. That's a topic for another day.
It's not a topic any day.
I just hope that this team considers the fact that, you know, continuity matters, culture matters, the locker room matters, and... that win now mode is not going to solve the problems that this team has had for the past 20 years in terms of attendance, in terms of relevance in the market. I think what you need to do is you need to create diehard fans. You need to create a culture. And I think that the way you do that is by having a culture that already exists on the pitch and in the locker room. You know, one feeds the other. And, you know, if fans don't have anybody to identify with and there's no continuity there, I'm not sure there's going to be continuity in the stands either.
Caleb Porter, the Haslams, Dr. Pete, they may not be able to solve all the problems, immediately, but we will right after this break here on the Massive Report. We're back with the Massive Report podcast, broadcasting here live, live to tape, or I guess it's not live to digital file, whatever that may be, at the Point Tavern in Arlington. They're a new sponsor, if you will, for the Massive Report, sort of, kind of, as a sponsoring us by letting us stay here and record our podcast in their wonderful back room here with a view of some darts and the Blue Jackets. It's great. We've got Pat Murphy. We've got Mike Krosky. We've got Alex Stanek. We've got Sam Fahmy. What we don't have is a jersey sponsor for the crew. We were talking last week, you know, as the reveal of the new crew jersey was imminent, and it had already been leaked and broken there on themassivereport.com.
And it looked exactly like we thought it did.
It did, except the new one had MLS logos on the sleeves.
Ah, yes.
That was a change. But if you want to see that new jersey, you can see it over on massivereport.com.
Modeled excellently by Katie Witham.
Yeah, our own Katie Witham. I had a friend who was saying, who's this Katie Witham? And it's like, Katie Witham? No, Katie, we love Katie. She's terrific. Great alumnus of the crew. And was it Fox Sports Ohio then?
Yeah.
Regardless, still no jersey sponsor. notably someone that does have a jersey sponsor is a team that doesn't even have a team right now. Austin United FC, and I know that it caused no no shortage of consternation among Crew fans to see earlier today when that thumb in a gingham shirt, Anthony Precourt, announced that Austin had acquired a jersey sponsor, Yeti. You know, if you've ever thought, hey, my drink could be colder, but I would rather spend $60 to make sure it's colder.
You're just talking about the koozies,
have a Yeti.
Right?
The koozies, the Yeti koozies or the Yeti coolers, where it's like, why would you? The idea of like paying $200 for a cooler is just beyond me. But some people really like stuff cold. They really like it cold. And Anthony Precourt, so maybe they're going to be the very cold, like, soccer jerseys.
That'll help make it better when the fans have to walk to the games in the heat.
Yeah, in the heat.
Of Austin's summer weather.
Yeah, I think it's a great, great sponsor for a number of reasons. Like you said, it's going to make those 20-minute walks from your parking spot in somebody's neighborhood illegally to the stadium much more, enjoyable. And I also
Yeti coolers have wheels, right? You can. I can't afford one, so I don't actually know.
I'm sure you can bring them into the stadium too.
They do, and I'm sure you can. And it's also great because the groundwater at the stadium site is toxic, and you can't drink it. So you can bring water from parts of Austin that are not toxic.
Is that a thing?
And then you're set. So I think it all around, is a great business move. From Anthony Precourt, who's really known for, figuring out great business moves and not screwing stuff up. So this is going to be good, I'm sure. Like everything else he does, he's not gonna screw it up.
I mean, we know that Anthony Precourt is going to do how Anthony Precourt going to do, and the rest of those guys, and Dave Greeley, who's getting paid probably twice by them, like he's getting the money. As an employee and then also money as a consultant. But facts are the facts. Right now they've got one more jersey sponsor, at least publicized, than the Columbus Crew, and they aren't going to be playing games for another season. Crew are less than a month away from the opener. What is taking it so long to get this signing, this shirt signing, across the line, fellas?
I don't know. I mean, we've seen this before with deals from the Crew, and obviously you hope new ownership, maybe they get done earlier, but it took, when Anthony Precourt was the owner, it took towards very close to the season, if I remember correctly, to get the Acura deal announced and finalized and all that. I want to say it was the same with Barbasol, that it was close to the season. We've seen this with TV agreements and the radio deals and things like that. For whatever reason, they just tend to drag their feet, and it almost always gets done. I say almost because you never know, but it'll at least be something that the fans can get excited about closer to the season as the hype builds. Maybe that's what they're looking for.
But this is, again, they brought in Steve Lyons from the Columbus Partnership for this. This isn't last off season where you've basically gone from operating without a front office or anything for, most of the year and are trying to rush to get everything ready to be able to open the doors on opening day. A lot of those people, I know they still are filling in, some of those positions, but especially a guy like Steve Lyons, they knew the jersey sponsorship was coming up. How is this still, still something? There's one other MLS team that doesn't have a shirt sponsor so far, I believe, if I recall looking at that. So the Crew aren't alone in this, and of course they've played seasons without a sponsor before, or at least a couple games, before. I think it was prior to Barbasol coming in, I think, between Gildan and Barbasol. Just walk me off the ledge and tell me it's going to be all right.
Let's talk about two things. How about this? They're going to save it for Crew Week. It'd be a great way to kind of either kick off or end Crew Week. Probably kick off, right?
Are they going to agree to put put the sponsor on people's jerseys that they've already bought, kind of like if you got a guy who moves or they trade and they, you know, replace the new number, or when Pedro switched numbers or Artur.
That's the thing. If you want a jersey without the sponsor, you just want it all crew. You don't want some sponsor on there. You can buy it, right?
Yeah, and that yellow shirt looks super, super, super good with no sponsor. It is incredible.
I would love that.
Absolutely incredible.
Take advantage, folks.
They are going to have a sponsor. Like you mentioned, Steve Lyons knows everybody in Columbus. They have options, and it's still a negotiation, last I heard, but they have options. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. This is not, you know, pre-court's crew where they're like, oh, I don't know if we're going to get one in time for the deadline. No, it's just, you know, can we squeeze an extra couple bucks out of these guys by playing one against the other, see what happens. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
How about this? If we can do a quick round the table.
Yeah.
Who would you like to see be the sponsor?
I don't know if I want to answer that.
Sam, can the Massive Report podcast throw their hat in the ring?
No.
Ooh, or GCG bag.
No.
If GCG bag wasn't spending probably as much as the crew are going to get for the shirt sponsor to sponsor this podcast, I think they would be interested. I you know, the only other would be I'm not going to speak of another bar because we're at the Point Tavern, and the Point Tavern is the finest public house that I know.
I'll start it off with 2 points. One, it's not going to be an insurance company as long as they're still playing in Mafre Stadium. So get
Nationwide's,
you
know, out.
Get Nationwide, Root, any of those companies are probably out. I'm going to go with White Castle.
Oh, Alex, how do you feel about that?
That would definitely be an interesting choice for them. I think that would be a very interesting choice for them.
I got it.
I was going to say Huntington.
That's a good one.
But they are going to have options. So I would not stress if I were a crew fan. I haven't heard names, but I've heard they have options. So,
what about 180 Property Development?
That's another. Hey,
again,
spending
a lot of money on.
Yeah, a lot of money on the Master Report. We get paid tons for this. We don't, right, Pat?
Hey,
right,
wait,
Alex?
A minute.
Right, Sam? Right, Ralph and Brian?
I feel gypped.
Yeah, I don't know what I would ideally want a sponsor to be. I guess you just want the highest bidder, right? Like, I mean, who cares what, in my mind at least, like, who cares what's on your shirt as long as you're getting money for it? Like, I don't know. I've never cared. Like, people were saying how much, and Alice, you said the yellow jersey looks so much better without a sponsor. Like, I'm so used to seeing soccer jerseys, mm-hmm. and now basketball jerseys and even other sports it's started to bleed into. Obviously, it's long been a part of NASCAR and things like that. You know, it almost doesn't even affect me anymore. It looks weirder when I see things with that. Like, when I watch a national team mm-hmm. game, like, it takes me, like, a few World Cup games before I'm like, oh, yeah, none of these teams have sponsors on their jerseys. I don't know. I'm just so used to it that it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it is a little bit surreal, you know, that we're talking about this, and it's like, oh, who can we get this a sponsor? I can't wait. Like, we're talking about it like it's, you know, who's going to be the transfer pick? Who should Crew sign? Ooh, are we going to get Huntington in there? Ooh, what about Nationwide? No, they've already got that position filled. Why would you go from that? It'll be interesting. We do have a little bit of other, you know, I think the other biggest news that broke over last week, which really I think was underreported to an extent. I mean, the new collective bargaining agreement, it is in place. And to be clear, the old collective bargaining agreement had expired. So these, you know, the players, we could have been facing a work stoppage. To the players' credit, to the owners' credit, they were able to continue negotiations, and they got it done. And it looks like things, you know, for the players, they racked up a couple pretty big wins. I've got, there's some good stuff on MLS.com. Philadelphia Inquirers had some good stuff. But I'm going to just go through the update from our own Patrick Gul-Dan, who provided a quick recap of a couple of the big things. One is that there's a big base salary going up. It's going up pretty significantly. And
the minimum salary is, I think, it's now six figures.
Yeah, it looks
like. Which is pretty, I mean, you know, that's what sports leagues, a major league sports league should be. But I think, you know, that they were at like 53 or 58 before. So that's a pretty big jump.
From 2004 to what this official MLSPA graphic is saying, from 2004, the base salary for the senior minimum was just $24K. And by 2024, it's going to be 109. Now the reserve minimum's going from 10.2K in 2004 to 85K in 2024. So, and then a maximum of 35K in incentives available for senior players, 53 for reserve players. They're also getting a revenue share agreement on future media rights deals.
That could be big.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because MLS, you know, yeah. I guess it's going to be interesting how the accounting for that works because of MLS and Soccer United media or marketing, whatever it is, the kind of weird amorphous blob that U.S. soccer and all this is all part of.
MLS,
yeah. And but they get... Every single soccer game that you see played here in the great United States of America, they get a little bit of money for that. So players getting some more money off those TV agreements, I think that's a big win.
The TV deals, the teams in MLS have been told not to renew TV deals past, I think it's 2022. And, you know, the speculation is that MLS will do something similar to what the NFL has done. I would imagine it goes through something like ESPN Plus and then along with the nationally televised games. So, you know, that could be a deal that the league, instead of teams negotiating their own, you know, cable streaming or, you know, whatever rights, you know, the league does that. So there could be some money to be had there for the players.
I think one of the other big changes that fans can expect is around free agency. The minimum age now to qualify for free agency is now 24 years old and I believe 5 years experience in the league, going from 28 and 8 years. That, I believe, that's a lower bar for being an unrestricted free agent than, you know, the NHL has. Then you see in Major League Baseball, I mean, heck, 24 years old, you might just be getting called up in MLB. So that is really big for players.
Well, and that could affect, you know, you think about these smaller market teams. I think you could look at it from two perspectives, one positive and one negative. On the negative side, if you know, you have a young player, you know, say you draft somebody, and I know the draft's not that big of a deal, or you have a homegrown kid, but you have a guy who maybe wants to go to a bigger market, almost like an NBA type thing. You could have guys, you know, leaving your team earlier from a small market perspective, but you're also going to be able, you know, now the Crew signed, I think, you know, one of the few free agent guys that have come to the Crew is Ricardo Clark, and at that point he was so far,
right,
you know, past his prime, he wasn't able to do much for the team. Now there's going to be guys available that are going to need teams that are still going to be, you know, even before their prime, really. And, you know, as you continue to have a talent infusion in this league, coming from youth development and elsewhere around the world, you know, there are going to be guys available that, you know, you know that name and you recognize as hey, this could be good for our team, as opposed to kind of those aging veterans, which has really been what it's been,
right,
in free agency and why they fought so hard to get something, you know, better for the players.
Well, you know, it's also one of those things where by the time a player did come up as a free agent, they were generally washed up. And in terms of free agency, players want it because, in theory, you're able to make a nice chunk of change.
Yeah.
Well, generally, the free agents in MLS weren't making much more, if they were even making as much as they were prior, because generally they were guys that were past their prime or guys that maybe were coming off injury, things like that. So this is a whole different ballgame, and I think it's going to raise salaries for these young guys coming up.
Well, and it also just goes to show how much money the league thinks they're going to make, the fact that they didn't fight tooth and nail for this.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a good point.
Think about how hard they fought for the 28-year fought against the 28-year free agency last time. The fact that they were just kind of like, oh, yeah, 24-year free agency, yeah, sure. More private flights, yeah, that's fine, too. Higher salary, that's fine. Yeah, we can do that. They know that they are going to make a fortune, and not necessarily on Major League Soccer, but this, you know, the
World Cup 26.
Some stake in U.S. soccer, and in they have a stake in Mexican soccer now as well, I believe. You know, they know that that is going to be very, very lucrative, and they just don't want the gravy train to stop in that regard. And so they're fine with, you know, making it harder to make money in Major League Soccer, because, frankly, Major League Soccer is just a small part of the overall economic picture for the owners in this league.
Do you think it's, you know, surprising that I was almost expecting, and maybe this was just, you know, me being jaded from the entire Save the Crew experience, that these owners were going to, you know, argue poverty and come out saying, we have nothing. Look at all the money we've lost. Maybe there's the right realization from them that it's kind of hard to argue poverty when you're getting an infusion of $250 million every year with a new expansion fee. Were you surprised that this came together, and again, such you know, big gains for the players relative to some of those other deals? Or again, is it really just a reflection of how well that the owners are still coming out on this?
No, I think one big thing is that you look at a guy like Arthur Blank. I think somebody like him has really helped kind of open the eyes of a variety of owners, whether they've been in MLS for a while or not. I've heard a variety of owners have said that they've talked to Arthur Blank about kind of his philosophy. And I think he's a guy. I mean, he's got endless money. I mean, he's got Home Depot money, right?
Well, yeah, but the Falcons aren't winning anything anytime soon. So you might as well try and win with Atlanta United.
Right. Yeah. But I just think there's a new infusion of energy and a different way to win than there was the previous collective bargaining agreement. And I think that's what probably the biggest thing is. These guys have money. They want to win. And if they're not winning, they're like, we don't want to lose a lot of money. But they see what Arthur Blank did, and they go, let me try and replicate that as much as I possibly can from a business standpoint and also from on the field, even though most teams aren't – I mean, the high majority of MLS teams aren't going to be bringing in $70,000, you know, per game. But I just think there's a different mentality. And then when you look at the TV deal that's going to come up, and then you have the – they're looking long-term, the World Cup 2026 here in America and in North America, that's going to be a huge moneymaker for every team here in MLS. They see that coming.
Do you think that this league could have – how do you think it – maybe it's a moot – well, it's clearly a moot point. But do you think that this team or league could have dealt with and navigated a play stoppage or work stoppage?
No, absolutely not. I mean, they came to the doorstep of that prior to the last CBA being reached. I mean, they were within, what, like 4 days or something obscene like that. I think they know they have to strike while the iron's hot, right? And that's where the league is right now. They're feeling a bump up. They have all these cities just begging for a team. Why in the hell would you want to screw that up over some, as far as they're concerned, some very minor issues, right? So they go, let's just give the players what they want. Sure, give them some charter flights, make free agency a little easier. Yeah, because again, they see the money down the road. They're looking long term, not today.
Yeah, and to answer your question, Bart, I think, you know, you look at a lot of league. I mean, I think that there's this perception that, you know, the major sports leagues in this country are immune to work stoppages, and you know the NBA went through one. It's been a handful of years now, but that was a big impact on the league's revenue. And I mean, obviously, but you know, it made a bigger impact than maybe was reported widely. You know, I mean, we've seen the NFL get through it. We've seen Major League Baseball get through it, but that's a hit. And you know, yes, MLS is 25 years old, and they're making this big deal about it. But in general sports terms, that's not long at all. And you know, there's teams that still don't make money. These players, you know, we just talked about with the minimum salaries going up. I mean, there's guys that if there had been any sort of long-term work stoppage, would have had to look at getting other jobs, just because while you think, especially in bigger cities, the New York cities, LA's, Toronto's, you know, there are some guys that in this last collective bargaining agreement were able to get by, but and it wasn't like the old days of Major League Soccer, but, you know, it's still not easy. You're not making money like other athletes are. So a work stoppage would have certainly put a dent in the players, and I think the league, too. I don't think any owner was looking forward to, hey, we're going to not only, you know, be putting money into this to try and keep our teams going, but now we're not going to have any money coming back our way. Let's figure that out, like Mike said.
I think they're also, you know, the strategy has changed, right? So for the first, you know, 20 years of this league, the argument was, you know, we can't pay anymore. It was, you know, everything was run on a shoestring budget just to kind of keep things going. And now the argument is, you know, we have just a couple expansion teams left, and you billionaires
and
better
paying a ton to get those teams into the league.
Better get in now, regardless of what we're charging you. Otherwise, you're going to miss out.
Right.
And so the argument now is, you know, they've gone from trying to make the, you know, the bust argument. Now they're making the boom argument, which is, you know, you better if you want to profit long term, we are profiting now, and you know you better be willing to pony up some big cash if you want to get involved in this long term play. Whether or not I think that's kind of a good financial decision for these owners, I think you can make a strong argument for it given, you know, the other things that come with Major League Soccer, like we mentioned about U.S. soccer and Mexican soccer and stuff like that. But I think that's what they're doing now. I don't think that the economics have fundamentally changed. I think that the argument that they're making to other billionaires has changed, and I think this is the result.
I mean, really, what would they have had to gain to hold out on some of these issues? I think that's what it comes down to. The bang for the buck wouldn't have been worth it at all. And you're absolutely right, Stanek. I mean, they have guys jumping over each other to try and, you know, spend $300-500 million to just for the luxury of joining the league. Yeah, they'd be foolish to turn that kind of thing down and give themselves a black eye over what?
Yeah, and it just hurts soccer. I mean, right. You know, you have an opportunity each summer to continue to grow the game. You know, when you know, the NBA is done, NHL is done, before college football and the NFL starts up, you're only competing with Major League Baseball. You know, if you're cutting into that season...
Hey, that's very, you know, that's something you have to consider with NYCFC.
valid. But yeah.
I mean, that's a good example, though. NYCFC spending the kind of money that they are in a new stadium. You know, the Crew spending the kind of money they are in a new stadium.
Well, you hope they get a new stadium.
Speaking of billionaires.
The amount of money that is being thrown around in this league on things that used to be, you know, a fraction of that is crazy.
So it didn't even exist. I mean, like, stadiums, you know, when the Crew built
$27 million for the Crew stadium.
Right, when they built that, and, you know, we all know what that is now, in comparison to some of the other stadiums around the league, I mean, that was great, and
right.
that was huge. And I mean, you know, it'll always be a part of history, but history is going to look back on it and be like, that was great and all, but that was just the beginning. And I think you saw that change pretty quickly.
Well, in the inflation of all other aspects of this league, from stadium costs to expansion fees, all of those things have far outpaced the inflation in terms of what players are earning. So, you know, players are still, you know, as a ratio of, you know, total investment, probably coming out losers in this deal, but they've made big gains. I think this next CBA that'll come out, you know, that's going to be the one where both sides are really going to go to the mat, and, you know, there's a potential for a lockout there, depending on how much money that World Cup makes. Because players at that point are going to want millions and millions of dollars, and I'm not sure the owners are going to want to go that far, because I'm not sure that the growth is going to really pan out the way that owners hope it will.
Well, this, I mean, the World Cup here in the U.S. is in 26, right?
Yeah.
This one's through 24.
Yeah,
right?
This agreement's through 24. So yeah, that'll be down the pike, but it'll still be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe it might still be too far away. It might be the one after that that's kind of the big one. But I think that the league is basing a lot on that 2026 World Cup. I think they were hoping they were going to get Qatar, and they didn't. When that went to Qatar instead of to the United States, I think they kind of changed the game plan.
And I'll still believe they're going to play it in Qatar when they do, man. I know it's too late at this point for them to find a new venue, but, man,
it's going to be a bizarre December.
They played it. They played it in Russia when everybody was like, "Oh no, they can't do that."
Yeah, but yeah, you didn't have to change the whole calendar.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot that's gonna have to go into this.
There weren't as many immigrant labor bodies buried beneath those stadiums. Not as many.
I think they're gonna play it there. I think it's gonna be the half-empty stadiums, and it's gonna be objectively the worst World Cup that we've ever
100%.
seen.
100%. You're absolutely right.
I mean, it's gonna make the South Korea stuff look hilarious. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, but yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. Happy for the players though. They got what they deserve, or at least part of it. I still think they're underpaid, but
yeah,
you know, we'll
I mean
see.
Comparatively.
Oh,
for sure.
Definitely. Just a couple other things to kind of run and check off the list. We've got greater salary budget flexibility. Basically, it looks like they're trying to transition and eventually get rid of targeted allocation money, my favorite Don Garber fun buck. They've still got the general allocation money, and some of the targeted allocation money is becoming general allocation money, and I don't know, it's just a way for them to create a new box on a spreadsheet to give teams more money. So that's happening. Then the other big one that I think kind of touched on a point that we were making earlier in the discussions around Zell Ryan and whether to go with that kind of younger guy versus a more established player in his prime, the more finished product, and this new under 22 player initiative. So the MLS will have discretion to allow clubs to sign up to 3 players who are 22 years old or younger on a reduced charge to the club's salary budget. And they'll be providing more details. It kind of sounds like the young DP, but these are not taking DP slots necessarily. And it seems like I think it's a great move for, you know, teams like that. And I think, again, from the MLS standpoint, a league that, as much as Don Garber might not want to admit, although I think he might have admitted at some point that it is going to be needs to be kind of a seller's league. One that supports that mission.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they want to be a league full of Atlanta United, like when they sold Almiron. I mean, that way they recoup their
record
investment.
Record fee to Newcastle United.
You and your Newcastle, yeah. You know, that's the whole idea. So it makes perfect sense to do that. So they're setting themselves up from a business standpoint perfectly.
And I'm just happy to see that they're passing new rules that change the way the salary works. That are not driven solely by bailing out one of the LA teams. So that's always nice, too.
Well, and, you know, another great thing about that is from a player standpoint, the charter flights, I think, is going to be a bigger deal than people realize.
Oh, for sure.
I really do.
I mean, just having talked to the guys, I mean, you know, to fly from Columbus to Chicago on a United or, you know, Southwest flight is fine, but
to go to L.A.
Yeah, to go to L.A., to go to Seattle, to go to Vancouver, you know, sitting on a flight with, you know, filled with, you know, what you and I and Alex and maybe Bart may fly 5 first class, I don't know. But,
oh, you know it with all my money that I get from the Massive Report.
Right. But just to do that as a professional athlete, you know, it's – I mean, this is something people don't think about, but that's not something they normally have to do, in other major sports. And I think, you know, it's just easier, and, you know, you don't have to go through the security stuff, and, you know, you don't have to worry about who you're sitting next to, and, you know, as a professional athlete, you should have that. This is what professional leagues across the world, major leagues, not every league, but the big ones, all have, and if Major League Soccer wants to be there, then teams should be flying chartered, and now teams will be required to use a certain number of legs for chartered flights, and they'll have the option to go beyond that. So I know the guys, you know, the big thing about making the playoffs was, hey, we get to fly chartered. Like, I know that was a kind of an underlying thing that they would do, and the players appreciate that. And that will be, you know, for guys coming over from overseas, you know, you come over and you hear from people that, or you get to this league and you find out I'm flying commercial.
Right.
You know, I can't imagine what Zlatan's you know, I mean, what his reaction
I
was.
I think for a lot of them, it's like, I'm flying. I'm not taking a bus.
That's
because
true. They, I mean, I think, you know, like Zlatan played in the Champions League where they had to fly places and whatnot. So, and even across like Italy, you know, there are definitely cities you fly to and from. But yeah, you do make a good point that the crew did take a bus to Cincinnati last year. So
I think we missed a grand opportunity to put in place another stupid rule by letting teams trade their frequent flyer miles. So we could have sold Will Trapp for 80K and 50,000 miles.
Don't sell Garver short. They could stick that in there. You know how they make rules as
I would love to see that, where we trade like our first round super draft pick for like 4,000 miles because we don't care.
That'd be a deal. Hey, Bart, do you get upgraded automatically because your hair is so awesome?
As I've tried, but they do not do that.
So it's not so bad thinning.
No.
Hair department like myself. Okay. I thought I was missing out on these great things.
But, you know, speaking of flights, crew in Tucson, or en route to Tucson for the Tucson Sun Cup, I believe? Yep. The new preseason. So, first of all, are they not doing they're not doing the Charleston preseason tournament?
There is no stadium anymore for them to do it at.
Oh, I missed that one.
The stadium last year, mid-season, got sold. The team got sold, and they sold the stadium, and now it's becoming like retail. They tore that place down.
I really wanted to go to that tournament. I really wanted. Charleston's an awesome city.
So wait, the Charleston Battery are no more?
No, they exist. Oh. They're playing, from my understanding, they played the rest of the season, I want to say at College of Charleston Soccer Stadium or something like that. But yeah, that stadium, if you've ever been there, was awesome. It does now make the Mapfre Stadium the first soccer-specific stadium. There was some argument there about when, because they both opened right about the same time.
Interesting.
And which one was truly the first. That stadium is no more. And it was really cool. I went last year with Ralph and Patrick, and that stadium had not only a very cool bar in it that had all sorts of sports memorabilia, but almost like each, you know, if you walk through like the back of the stadium and the press box and stuff, there were like rooms for European teams and just all sorts of memorabilia. It was very cool.
So
I don't
it's
know
all
what
torn down now.
It's gone, and I guess they're building some either retail or apartments or condos or something. Was what somebody told me.
Wow.
Nice.
Well, we did have I think we've got some audio from Lucas Zelarayan talking about this preseason.
Caleb talking about
Lucas.
Yeah, we'll finally get to there see him. It sounds like.
Yeah.
We haven't seen much in the way of the crew, and by that I mean any of the crew with these closed door scrimmages. But from my understanding, they are working to get streaming for this Tucson tournament.
Sweet.
And our friend Neil Sika, I know is out there in Arizona and should be on the call for some of these games. But starting Saturday, it looks like we'll get to see at least three crew preseason games via streaming, which will be nice because, you know, I know crew fans are obviously excited to see what this team looks like a little bit this year. And as someone who's supposed to be trying to cover this team, it's been hard to do without actually seeing anything. So it'll be our first look at Lucas, which, you know, we touched on him a little bit earlier, but a guy that I think we are all excited to see how he fits into a role that has been, you know, Pipa Higuain's for so long, with the exception of, you know, a couple times he's been hurt.
We brought in Lucas Zelarayan to play the number 10. When you look at the Columbus crew and you look at the number 10, it's exciting when you look at legacy at the 10. And so now it's Lucas who wears the 10 shirt. And I'm very confident that he's going to perform and produce. And, again, it's not about replacing, it's about carrying the club into this next era. He's a special player. You know, I've now worked with him on the training ground for 15 days, and he has some special qualities and gifts. He certainly will need some time in the preseason to get up to speed with his teammates, to get on the same page with his teammates. Yesterday in the match, he showed his quality. Anybody that watched the game, if you were wondering, you wouldn't be wondering anymore if you watched the game yesterday.
I would have watched the game if they streamed it.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I think this is a very interesting player, and we started to talk about this earlier, and we touched on him a little bit last week. So he's a guy who, in Mexico, was playing at a very high level, as you touched on, Alex. But he wasn't ever asked to consistently be a true number 10. And that, I think, is going to be the biggest transition for him is, you know, you've got to fill that role. And that's a tough role to fill. Now, what I do think is that, you know, this team was at its best last year when Higuain was in that role. So at the minimum, he needs to be a 34-year-old Higuain. And I think from what I've seen, and Alex, you were talking about having watched some of his stuff earlier, I think he can do that.
Yeah.
But you just spent a club record amount of money, so you want more. And, you know, you heard from Caleb there, and obviously he's watched him these last – that was last week when we talked to him. So they've had even more time to train and see him. But, he sounds excited. You know, Caleb isn't one for hyperbole, I've learned. And I think that you get the sense that that's somebody he's actually excited about. You know, he talked about him in a similar voice as he talked about Darlington Nagbe, a guy who, as Alex pointed out earlier, he's worked with before and really likes. So I think that, from what we're hearing, this is all positive. It'll just be very interesting to see how he fits in. You know, how does Pedro Santos do coming back out on the wing? This whole attacking four, and you can even throw the Fernando Adi role coming off the bench and whatever he will do, how this all works, I think is going to be very interesting and imperative to success this year, because they scored 39 goals last year, and I just learned this today. That was at least the fewest they'd scored since 2011. In 2010, they played four fewer games and still scored more than that. So they need to figure out a way to score consistently, and Zellerón may be a catalyst for that.
He seems really hungry. If you pay attention to him on social media and all, I mean, he seems like somebody who's fairly well-grounded. I mean, you can only tell so much from social media, but some of the younger guys we signed, you could see the money and stuff kind of go to their head pretty quickly. I haven't seen it from him yet anyway, and he was coming from a League MX, which is not a small league where you don't earn much money. So I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He seems incredibly talented. A lot of room to grow. Is there a chance that we lose money on him? Yeah, sure. But I think this is the kind of player that you need to start gambling on. And if we're going to compete with the best teams in the league, we need to be signing these young, talented players with the idea of selling them on. And you run the risk of, striking out on some of them. I don't think he's going to be one. And he looks like the real deal from the bits I've seen of him. He's got good feet.
You're talking about the attacking four. I think one aspect of Porter's system that maybe was a little overlooked just because of the rash of injuries last year was how often outside backs create opportunities and get pushed into the attack. And then you have Milton back. We talked about him last year. It's like essentially acquiring a new player. So add him into the mix, right? So, you know, and then you're going to have a whole season of Diaz, right? Mokhtar looked okay with us, you know, and now he has a whole off season.
Having not played for multiple months before coming over.
Right. So, you know, he's going to be a big sub, you know. And then if Zardes has some rough patches, you have a guy like Adi, who I know Stanek likes a whole lot, to come in. Oh, you don't?
Are we gonna talk about Adi at some point? It's probably not the right segment for it.
No, I think
we can. We're talking attacking yep. Crew players. We talked about him last week, so I think it's your turn.
Mm-hmm. You want to finish your point before I go on like a 15-minute rant about Fernando Adi?
I'm giving you the chance. No, the main thing is I think last year was an aberration. You know, I mean, last year we had just an absolute ridiculous amount of injuries. Now the players are in place. Even if we do have a few injuries, there's depth that we didn't have. So I'm excited about it. And again, we struggled last year when Zardes couldn't find the back of the net, even when he was right on the goal line and would hit him off or hit, not even hit frame. Now he has a little legitimate competition to keep the fire lit under him, right? And if he's not scoring, then Adi can come in and pop in a handful of goals, right? Right, Alex?
I'm ready for my rant. Hold on. I'm being told to wait.
Just a lot. I'm probably more careful than ever with my former players. I know them better than the other players, which helps. When you've had a relationship with guys can do. You know what they're like inside and out. You've been in the trenches with them. You've won games with them. You've lost games with them. You've had, you've built a trust. But you know them inside and out. So that helps. But also, I'm more careful with my players, former players, because I had a lot of good years with Adi. We won a trophy together. And so if I'm going to bring a new guy or a guy in that I've already worked with, I want it to work out. And so, yes, there was a pause, for sure. But at the same time, players are humans. We're all humans. People make mistakes. Spoke with Adi, had a good conversation with him. He admitted that it was a tough and difficult year last year. He seemed to have his head screwed on right. He was really hungry. He wanted to be with Columbus. He wanted to be back with my staff. And I know what he's capable of. He had also come off a couple of years where he had some injuries, and we wanted to make sure we dug into that. So we went through the same process that we do in adding every player, but we don't leave any stone unturned. I would just say that we were probably more careful than ever, making sure that it was the right move. But also the finances, when it came down to it, which I don't handle, Pat Tim do, meant that really this was something that was too good to pass up. Because of the relationship, because of, hearing from him and him, seeming like he was in a good spot mentally and admitting that last year was tough and, and then the finances meant that this was going to be a really good and smart bit of business to get a player like him, who 3 years ago was one of the best strikers in the league.
Yeah, so that clip basically is everything that I dislike about Caleb Porter in
that he wants
clip.
That he wants forwards that so, have well, scored the, goals
so
in
I'll,
MLS.
So I'll go through it. So he said that you
guys
know,
that want
he,
to be in
he
Columbus
wants it to work out, right? And that players are human, and that it was a tough year for him, and he's got his head screwed on, right? Right. So what you're hearing is I don't really care about the fact that he was 1.5 times over the legal limit, driving 102 miles an hour down the freeway. What I care is that he is going to score a lot of goals.
Oh my God,
and
Stanley.
Be a better player than the salary that he will be earning suggests.
Do you think that if the Crew hadn't signed him, Adi would just be on the street, or do you think there's another team out there that would have picked up a 28-year-old goal scorer?
What's Paladini doing now?
How old is he?
How old was he when he had the domestic violence incident?
Old.
He was younger than Adi.
No, he was so. Not. Get
I think he was
here.
Like 26, 27.
Somebody Google that.
Yeah,
so. He was
check
not.
This out. Let's
he
see.
Was not. He was
and,
not.
And he still
age.
Played after that.
Yeah.
My point is, going back again to culture.
Your point
want,
is that
do,
he's the
you know
Timbers
what,
guy that was part of the team
no.
that beat the Crew in the 2015 World Cup,
you
so you're salty.
Chad
that's
Marshall,
what it is.
Chad Marshall could have done what Adi did, and I would have wanted him.
What about Edson Buttle? He got multiple drinking, driving, over the legal limit issues when he was playing in MLS. Kyle Larin, the guy might be the best Canadian striker they've ever produced. He's going to – in sports – they're going to get opportunities.
Sure.
Right, wrong,
sure. And
otherwise.
I've never been a Michael Vick fan. There are a number of these players who kind of cross lines for me where, I don't want my club associated with them. And I think this kind of gets down again to this fundamental difference between Caleb Porter and myself, which is I want my team fundamentally to represent myself and my values and my city well on a daily basis.
That's cute and all, but that's why fans don't run teams.
What?
That's cute, but that's why fans don't run teams. You have people in positions like president or GM or coach
yes.
that make these decisions. And yes, they should vet players because you don't want complete scumbags coming in.
Yes.
But at the same time, if somebody...
Do you think that someone who's 1.5 times the legal limit driving 102 miles an hour down the freeway is not a complete scumbag? He could have killed people.
You're absolutely right. He could have.
I mean,
but
I wouldn't
thankfully
want rapists
he didn't.
On my team. I wouldn't want.
Well, that's different.
I mean,
come on. Hold on a second. Comparing the two is a little silly.
But I think this is. I think this is the fundamental point. Is is it is it?
Do you want a bunch of choir boys, or do you want some soccer players who can score goals and make things happen?
I think that you can strike a balance between choir boys and people who don't drive 102 miles an hour down the freeway drunk. I think that there is a line there.
I'm not excusing that type of behavior. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, understand. So there's no second chances. We don't do second chances in life.
There are players who I would not want on a roster.
I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about in life. Forget signing on a team. Meaning like family, friends. You know, anybody's made a mistake.
I think that there are people who make mistakes that will then affect their professional lives for the remainder of their life, especially when those mistakes are in the public space, right? So if you are a person who is representing a business in a public manner and you make a bad enough mistake and people know about that mistake and people associate with you with that mistake, it's going to prevent you from getting employment. So do I think that everybody should have a second chance? Maybe. Do I think that everybody should be employed as if that mistake never happened? No, absolutely not. That's completely
Then what do you do? I mean, like, yes, you make a mistake, so, but then what's he supposed to do with the rest of his life? He's 28 years old.
I think the real difference is this, and what is always the difference in sports and right or wrong is the fact is whether you can produce at a high level, score touchdowns, score goals, whatever it is, Kareem Hunt, look at everyone else.
Yep.
The difference, it is a double standard. If you are a reserve player and you get a DUI doing 102 on the highway,
sure,
your career is over. Mm-hmm. If you are an all-star, it is not. It's not fair. It's not right. But that is the reality in sports. And I think that is where and how Caleb Porter and Fernando Adi, for that matter, will ultimately get judged on this decision. If Fernando Adi isn't scoring, I can see them. And again, they don't have much money, you know, they invested in this. So I can see him getting, you know, cut immediately if he's coming on and he's not scoring, or if he's a disruption in the locker room.
Well, and I think Kareem Hunt's actually a really good example of, you know, a player who I should be supporting and who I won't. And I don't care how well they do, I'm not going to.
No, that's fair.
And you know, I think with Adi, it's similar feeling. But I think the fact that he talked about, you know, he knows this guy. You know, he knows who Fernando Adi is. He's been in the trenches with Fernando Adi, right? He is, on a certain level, saying, you know, what Adi did is not the Fernando Adi that I know. Mm-hmm. And that very well may be true. But it's, again, kind of this reverting back to this trophy run with Portland. This cup run with Portland. And, you know, I want to bring in somebody that I know, who I'm comfortable with, who I think I can kind of recreate this magic with, in spite of the fact that he did something that could have killed people. Like, we are lucky today.
Well, thankfully,
Fernando Adi is lucky today that he is not in prison from, for killing people.
Coaches are going to always go to players that they're comfortable with, especially when you're at a new place. I mean, Greg Berhalter brought in Zardes and Trapp.
And Hector Jimenez.
He didn't bring in Trapp.
No, I'm talking about with the national team.
No, I'm talking about
the national team.
Yeah, although Zardes was in the national team picture way before Berhalter.
Right, but he's got way more minutes under Berhalter than he got prior and would have gotten with just about any other coach. Well, and that's because they're trying to implement a certain type of Berhalter's trying to implement a certain type of system. So he wants a guy who fits that system.
Although, yeah, I would also argue that, you know, a lot of the guys who are also in the picture for striker have kind of fallen off the map a little bit. I think if there was literally anybody you could drop Zardes for, he probably would have done it. But Bobby Wood, maybe.
But
like,
I think
Aaron Johansson doing?
But
these
I think
days,
that's also know? The issue here in Columbus, because who is the proven backup to Giassi Zardes? I said last week, Fernando Adi's the best backup striker Cruz had since Ola Kamara.
And
it's, I mean, again, baggage, which is significant, and you know, not to be ignored aside, as I push it aside and ignore it, that is the case here, that he is a relatively proven, but I think, again, that's why I think the level, I don't think you give him the leash that you give an unproven guy, that you give, you know, a Patrick Mullins or an Adam John. He needs to be a player who can contribute when he's coming off the bench, can be a super sub, can be a catalyst, Because if he's not creating and he's not bringing something different and not, you know, creating opportunities, then he's not worth the baggage.
Yeah, I mean, I think the baggage, you know, and this kind of goes back again, and I don't want to, like, say this again, but, you know, he was 1.5 times over the legal limit without a driver's license. He did not have a driver's license at the time, and he was doing 102 miles per hour on the freeway. And I think what Porter's basically saying is, I don't care. I know this guy better than that experience, and I want to win. And he's the guy that's going to help me win. And for me, I mean, I think the fundamental difference between Caleb Porter and myself is that Caleb Porter wants to win right now. I want to build a club that I can be proud of.
Wait, hold on. Stanek, you were saying you're giving him 4 games. So you can't have it both ways. Caleb Porter's trying to get guys that can win now. You're saying 4 games into it, if he doesn't get whatever your threshold is, well, he's out. Well, so make up your mind. Which is it?
No, I think both of those things can exist together. My
what are you talking about? You can't have both. It's one or the other. Either he's successful and brings in guys that can help him be successful, yes, or he's not. What are you talking about?
The idea that you can't bring in guys who haven't driven 102 miles an hour.
Because strikers that can score 10 goals in this league are just, you can pick them off trees.
Fernando Adi hasn't scored 10 goals in a handful of seasons.
He scored, what, he 3 was, years? Correct me if I'm wrong. 3 years of double-digit goals
he
in
was
this
released,
league.
He was released from the worst team in the league.
Right, but that team was built horribly. That team stood no chance to be successful. That was one of the worst constructed teams I've ever seen.
Because they signed guys like Adi.
No, because they had like 75 midfielders and nobody else.
I don't think that Adi is going to be the difference between us being an MLS Cup winning championship team and, you know.
It's a low-risk, high-reward situation for a guy who has scored a boatload of goals in this league. And again, who would you rather have as your depth? Would you rather have Jordan Hamilton or Romario Williams, who popped in 1 goal last year? Who do you want? Or do you want a guy who scored 3 seasons worth of double-digit goals? Correct me if I'm wrong.
He is right.
I would rather find someone who did not drive
that doesn't exist.
Miles an hour
that doesn't exist. A player of that caliber isn't just no, no.
Lots of strikers who have not been driving.
Who's no? What I'm saying is, who is just available right now that you can pick up as a free agent for essentially pennies
on
the dollar?
There are hundreds of free agent strikers in the market right now
that can score double-digit goals in this league.
I don't know off the top of
exactly
my head, but
there's zero.
Look, regardless, the fundamental difference here that we're talking about is, yes, did he screw up? Absolutely. But what is his track record before and after that? And that's and
he has
if he has done that repeatedly, then you have a chronic drunk person who's making bad decisions chronically, and that's a fairly significantly more issue than somebody who messed up once while not having any sort of track record of being an issue, of being a problem, of being an idiot
prior or since.
And that's and I think that's fundamentally that's really where we're at. So I understand where you're where you're coming from, and I'm not at all saying that should be dismissed, but because of that, he should be even held to a stronger standard under his new employer.
Yeah, I just remember when we had this whole Daniel Paladini thing that everyone universally in the Crew fandom was saying, you know, get this guy out of here right away. You know, release this player. I never want to see this guy again.
If I'm not mistaken, that was domestic violence, and it was there was apparently more of
multiple,
a history of that, not just once.
Right. But I think even if it was once, I think people would say, you know, we got to get rid of this guy. I think that people with the drunk driving thing are excusing it as if it's lesser than a lot of other very serious things.
Well, that's because a lot of Crew fans drive home intoxicated after games.
Let's
be fair here. This is something that happens more frequently.
Sure.
And I essentially don't drink. So, I mean, that's something
you're allowed to have these opinions.
Today. But I think that, you know, even those Crew fans who maybe have too much, as far as I'm aware, are not driving home without a license at 102 miles
an
hour.
We would hope.
So perhaps.
There's, you know. And if somebody was doing that, I would think a lot less of the person than I would otherwise. I can understand why people think, you know, this is a good deal. But again, going back to this culture thing, and I could be unique on this, but I want this team. I feel like we have a great opportunity after the Save the Crew movement to really make the city proud and to be a great, you know, shining example, you know, a great advertisement for the city of Columbus. And I don't think that you do that by signing guys like Fernando Adi. I don't think that all the trophies in the world are going to make us, you know, proud of this guy. You know, I'm never going to be an Audi fan, even if he wins us two MLS Cups. I'm just not.
That's fine. I think you're allowed to have that opinion. I disagree
with the signing.
No, I think that's fair. So now we're moving on to the next topic where there's going to be no disagreement. So the XFL, what do people think? It's great. No, I'm kidding. The XFL sucks.
Awesome.
That's the official stance of the Massive Report, and that's it for this week. We'll see you guys. We do actually have to quick give shouts out to a couple of our sponsors. One of those is the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCGBag on Twitter and Facebook at GCGBag96. Also on Instagram at GCGBag for all the dankest memes. And you know they're dank because we're using a reference from 2015. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report podcast and the Massive Report website. But I don't know, Sam, can we get like a little banner thing on the website, link to that? We'll see. Maybe we've got to cut them another check for that one. And again, that would bring it into six seven figures,
I think. Seven.
With that one. I guess, fellas, let's get some parting shots, but let's get something that's a little bit maybe not so much animosity. Who is someone that you are going to be watching here in the preseason that you think, you know, who intrigues you the most to watch for this crew team in the preseason? Smurf, we'll start with you.
That's a good question. I think I'm very interested to see a couple guys. I mentioned Zelleron earlier. I'm interested to see how Pedro is back on the left wing, but I really am interested to see Darlington Nagbe in a crew uniform. And, you know, we've seen him play under Caleb Porter before, and obviously that was very successful. But from everything I've heard about preseason is he's been the guy. And not only on the field, but, you know, he's kind of taken on a leadership role with his teammates and whatnot. So I'm just very interested to see how it's all working, how his partnership with Artur is. I've heard positive things about Artur this preseason. I think if that's a partnership that works, and even if they decide later on to, you know, in the summer transfer window, say they go out and add another, you know, maybe a bit more of a Danny O'Rourke type destroyer defensive midfielder, to have a tandem like that they can play could be very beneficial. So that's probably the thing I'm most interested in seeing is how Darlington Nagbe is really fitting in with this team and what this team looks like with a Darlington Nagbe kind of driving things from the back line to the midfield.
Mike, what about you?
Milton, by far. Just see how he comes back. I mean, the great thing about being so young and spry like him is even after an ACL injury, you can return and not have a big lapse in terms of ability. And again, like I've mentioned a multitude of times, what he can bring this system, I think, is very undervalued. And I think given the amount of outside back issues we had, I think this is going to bring a whole new element to this Caleb Porter system and with this team.
Excellent. What about you, Alex?
I'm interested in seeing how the kids are developing. So Abubakar Keita is someone I want to see how he's getting on. And then the big one that I'm going to be wanting to take a look at in preseason is Sebastian Berhalter. Very, very interested to see what kind of a talent that we have in him. I heard nothing but good things when he was in the academy. But to see how he's developed in the last 2 years or so will be really interesting. And I hope that he can kind of potentially help fill some of the void that Trapp left, not initially, but at least show the potential to become that in the future.
Well, that's a good one. And again, Caleb Porter and Tim Bezbachenko, I think they've indicated how the esteem that they hold both Sebastian Berhalter and Aiden Morris, both of these young kids, by the fact that right now they are, you know, options three and four in that center midfield position. Mike stole mine. I was going to say Milton, so instead I'll go with the person that I always like to see, and that's Josh Williams.
There we go.
I'm kidding. No, I'm not. We're not kidding. Anyway, that's going to about do it for this week of the Massive Report. Again, big shout out to our sponsors, 180 Property Development. They are the people to meet with for your property design and development needs. Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. For Sam, for Pat, for Mike, for Alex, uh, for, for all of you guys listening, thank you so much for joining us. We'll should be back again next week. Hopefully our fearless leader, Brian Phillips, will be back as well. And until then, bye buddies.